Welcome to Beyond Bitcoin, a podcast about all things digital assets, the global communities they are creating, the generations that are using and investing in them, and the challenges faced by the nations that are seeking to regulate them. The content of this program is not to be taken as investment advice. The opinions expressed in the program by the host and the guests are their personal opinions only. Remember, feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management, and my co-host is Nitin Gower, Managing Director of State Street Digital Assets. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world, and Happy New Year to you all. Welcome to 2024. Great to have you back again. And of course, as normal, I'm here with my friend and colleague, Nitin Gower. Hello, Nitin.
Hey, Derek. Wishing you a very Happy New Year. And I think this is a great start for 2024 for both of us and for Portal Asset Management. So looking forward to this conversation. Of course, this time I'm calling in from Davos, or Davos, as I've been reminded, the real pronunciation is Davos, not Davos. So glad to be here again, Derek. Hope you had a good break.
So fabulous break. And the markets have been very progressive and kind to us as a fund and as investors. So it's great to see the growth that we've seen there since October, obviously spurred on by the completion really of FTX and the rear vision mirror, the adoption of BTC's ETF in the US, you know, the arrival of this as a conversational piece again, back into mainstream media and mainstream finance. The attitude towards investment is changed, and people are really looking at this sector as a sectorial growth. So a great way to start the year. But I'm very frustrated because I unfortunately have been in the Southern Hemisphere while you, Petros, and Mark Whitten have been at Davos. And so I feel I've missed out, and maybe some of the audience has too. So today is going to be all about what happened in Davos. So very keen to hear what your thoughts are, Nitin.
Yeah, and Derek, you should have the feeling of FOMO. You have missed out, and we have missed you, because I think you could have completed the whole team and have a much more richer engagement, as we have done, both me and you in Asia last year in December. I think it would have been great to have you here with us and collectively experience this Davos, which is an annual thing that we do. So it's interesting. I come here once a year. It's more of an intellectual engagement with not just crypto and digital assets, but also the emerging technologies and the various other areas around, let's say, you know, mental health and the focus on mental health and focus on it, you know. So this year, the theme, and every year, the WEF, which is the main event, the World Economic Forum, has a theme, and all the adjacent events that happen to the main event is somehow has this, you know, aligned incentive with that, you know, with that theme, whether it's consulting firms or whether it's large technology firms and the various countries who are showcasing and attracting investments. So this year, the theme was building trust. And of course, for me, trust from a technology perspective has been intrinsic to blockchain conversations, that it is a trust system. Bitcoin is a trust currency. And so trust has been top of mind for us since the inception of blockchain. But I think trust, yes, in context of World Economic Forum and Davos, has been around the various geopolitical events, around the emergence of AI as a dominant technology in this sort of decade and century, and how do we build trust in technology that doesn't exploit sort of human mindset and the situations that we're in today with, you know, geopolitical instability, wars, and the misinformation, disinformation. So it has been a really, really interesting sort of narrative, from expanding the notion of trust as we see in Bitcoin to the overall sort of humanity and how humanity is impacted by that trust. So I think it is very rich conversation. As you can see, Derek, I've lost my voice. We've had so much conversation. It's like being in college again, because what a small town that is meant to host just a couple of thousand people is suddenly, you know, bombarded with 8,000 plus people. So the adjacent towns are all busy. We all were staying in dorms and sharing rooms only because there's so much lack of available accommodation in the region, and high security because of course, the politicians and the CEOs who were there. So it was super interesting. Very cold, Derek. It was my lowest temperature was minus 19. Of course, we all had 3-4 layers, which made it harder because the spaces are very small. But at some point when you're intellectually stimulated, Derek, you don't care for any of these things. You're
Yes.
involved in this conversation, in talking to investors, talking to where the money's heading, what they're thinking. It was terrific, I would say. And I'll say one more thing, that what you, the promenade, which is the main street outside of the secure area, which was largely dominated by consulting firms and tech firms and blockchain firms, this year saw a huge explosion of AI firms coming
Yes.
into it. So that to me was an interesting sort of shift, which I think is telling of the times we live in, focus both in terms of investment, but also in terms of the changing landscape of technology itself.
It's still, so by the way, it's 41 degrees where I was for your 19 degrees. I would have happy to have shared some of it. It's still extraordinary to see that blockchain has such an outsized relevance and prominence at Davos, which is, the World Economic Forum. And it's still a tiny percentage of the global economy. And it's now making it makes sense that AI is there too as a prominent player. But even then, is actually also outsized for AI. So the World Economic Forum is clearly a place where they are future seeking, looking forward, and thinking, what are the important technologies that are going to play a major role in that? So yes, all reports are saying AI was a major played a major role. That I'd like to think that AI and blockchain, of course, work as simpatico. They work well together in being able to transact with algorithms, smart contracts, etc. Now, you gave a number of talks while you were over there and sat on a number of panels, both with our friend and colleague Michael Casey, but also with other groups. It'd be interesting to hear what those topics were and what you think the response was.
No, I think that's terrific. And also, Derek, it was not 19, it was minus 19. So we are a big
Oh,
difference between
yes.
41 and
Yes,
19.
minus, of course.
So I had some amazing, rich conversations. Of course, it was really good to hang with Michael Casey. He actually moderated two panels with me. He was the moderator, of course, and he also published a book, which I've encouraged a lot of audiences in, and colleagues to read, only because of his brilliant mind and the history of money and his engagement with technology, with blockchain, as a chief content creator at CoinDesk. So I spoke on one stablecoin, which was basically the impact of stablecoin on not just traditional finance, but also, as we have discussed on this show, Derek, the bringing liquidity from traditional finance into crypto finance as a primary vehicle. Stablecoin brings a lot of liquidity in. So crypto itself is impacted by the global macro events of interest rates and money supply as it pertains to financial services. So we talked a lot, and the panel consisted of course, me and one of the policy directors and VPs from Circle. Circle, as you know, is one of the issuers of stablecoin and USDC. And then we had somebody from Filecoin, one of the technical sort of minds, opining on the impact of stablecoin on Web3 ecosystems as we debate. So it was a rich conversation. Of course, that event was hosted by some of my colleagues at Blockchain Founders Capital, some emerging VC firms in with brilliant people driving that, and they are the ones who arranged for hosting us, which is Petros and me, in Davos, and by TD5, which was a huge VC conglomerate in UAE. So you can see it's truly global. We were Americans coming in, co-hosted by both a UAE, VC firm and a European, which is Munich or Germany-led VC firm. Super interesting conversation. The next conversation was hosted by CVVC, another Zug or Crypto Valley leading sort of VC and a think tank and an accelerator program, very, very prominent on BTC and ETFs. So this is the impact of Bitcoin ETFs, which I'm sure the entire world has talked ad nauseum since the approvals of ETF and hailed that as a huge success. And the conversation there on the panel was Citibank sort of think tank, which is Ronit Ghose, a good friend of mine, which, by the way, I've known him for the longest time, but I got to meet him for the first time at Davos. So, it was great to hang out with him. And of course, Gordon Lau, who is the chief economist of Circle, the USDC sort of issuer. Again, we don't discuss the impact of ETFs on traditional finance. What is the likes of BlackRock and the biggest asset managers in the world and family offices look at the ETF as an instrument, the risks associated with it, and overall sentiments around the world from a college of regulators globally. And then I also discussed the impact of ETFs on crypto itself. What does it do? A lot of discussion, in my opinions, were in summary, Derek, was around that these ETF approvals, while to me not very exciting because ETFs are have been there for the longest time. I used to work for State Street, which is was the pioneer in issuance of ETFs in the 80s. So it's been there for some time. But I think one thing, what it does, which is exciting to me, is not so much from traditional finance lens, Derek. It is more towards providing legitimacy to Bitcoin as an asset class to the industry. And second thing is it adds to the market depth of crypto that suddenly it's a demand-led price movement that now you have pension funds and eventually other investment managers who will, after the risk analysis, will, you know, we'll see a lot of inflows into Bitcoin that will lead to a bit more, you know, valuation, you know, upside to not just Bitcoin, but Bitcoin being a structural asset to the rest of the industry per se. There was a f amazing event. The third speaking engagement I had was at Filecoin and CNBC. And what's interesting about these events, Derek, is that you begin to see now these crypto firms with the media conglomerates. So Filecoin and CNBC, you see Chainlink and Nasdaq, you see Casper Labs and Financial Times. So you begin to see this pairing up of these things. So Filecoin and CNBC had an event, which talked, and Michael Casey also moderated and hosted that event as a journalist, you know, and a leader in this space, and talking about, you know, what are the use cases that are ripe for adoption in traditional finance, bringing in the crypto, just like what we've seen with ETFs. So ETF led the conversations, of course, but looking into use cases, and again, that was an amazing event, which towards the end, we all had low energy levels because we all are like, you know, hitting the, you know, pounding the pavement, as they say. Was interesting because you had biggest financial intellectuals from JP Morgan and from DTCC and, you know, Fidelities of the world, and then you had academics, researchers, you had folks from Filecoin, folks from some of the new sort of startups trying to figure this out. And that conversation was around, you know, what does the industry need to do to build this new infrastructure? What are the use cases? What are the protocols that are ripe for adoption? So it is good to hear the diverse perspectives from various cohorts. Took part in Casper Labs and Financial Times. So these were some of my speaking engagements, I think. And it is less about the opportunity to speak, which I'm always thankful for. But I think the you what you learn from exchanging those perspectives was simply phenomenal, Derek. So again, I think you should feel the FOMO of not being here for those rich conversations, which I think you would have thoroughly enjoyed because you always have this curious mind and a tireless sort of thinking around that aspect of it.
I would have thoroughly enjoyed it. Nitin, the arrival of the bigger institutional investors, particularly banks and participants in this market, has been fairly quiet. And it's interesting that they're now sitting on the same panels as these major crypto software service providers and crypto token offerings. That didn't happen some number of years ago, and even a year a bit ago, it didn't happen. And so now they're sitting on the same panel. And they have arrived here with the world of crypto assets and blockchain and its associated technology having gone through two of the darkest years of crypto winter that the industry has experienced. What that tells me is that they weren't looking at the cycles of price. They were looking at the progress of the technology. And right through 2022, when everybody continued to develop, you know, as they say, build in a bear market, but nonetheless, they continued to develop product. And 2023, these large institutions were preparing. So in the case of the BlackRock, we know they were preparing the ETF. And they've also, with the EDX exchange, we've seen a number of big institutions preparing for that. But now you're at Davos. And at Davos, you're seeing them appear on the same stage as these cryptocurrencies. Isn't that very telling, Nitin?
Absolutely, Derek. And I was thinking of the same thing, incidentally, and this is how I think our thinking is aligned. I was thinking that how the world has changed in just the 7 years I've been coming here, when you had a clear separation between the traditional financial institutions and crypto firms. And the conversation is not, I mean, there's of course a little bit of disruptive conversation that crypto industry wants to see, but I think the narrative has toned down from let's go and kill the banks to let's go and work with the banks and change the world in a constructive manner. So banks are working with financial institutions and protocols have opened up to working with banks. which I think is very positive. In fact, I was never of the opinions that you can get rid of banks. I think banks are essential to our financial system. Yes, they are slow and they're not very efficient, and the technology is old for the world we live in. And I think blockchain and the adjacent technologies around preserving trust and privacy, the zero knowledge proofs, and various emerging tech that blockchain has enabled can make a world of a difference. But I think there is a value to these institutions that have survived for hundreds of years in bringing some of the financial sort of instruments to the market. So I think there's now a reconciliation of sorts, I think, Derek, between these crypto protocols and large financial institutions. I think I get the feeling, Derek, that there's a realization by both the founders and of these new technology platforms and the large financial institution that they both need each other. That the firms that are growing, they need the capital, and they need to grow. They need to stay relevant, and they need to. And the large financial institutions who either have been plagued with the inability to grow because of traditions and conventions and regulations need these firms to develop technology so they can consume the tech when it's ripe and when it's mature. So I think there's an interdependency between these two ecosystems, which I think is a very positive sign for the industry to grow.
And looking at the user base for crypto is still small. We often get excited about the fact that it's the developing countries that are going to benefit from crypto first, and they are the first users of it. But is there any discussion on the size of the actual number of wallets and the actual number of used wallets or utilized wallets, and how this is going to grow? Was that discussed at all through these gatherings?
Actually, the focus I would think was more on usability and less on wallets, in the sense that after almost 15 years since inception of the Bitcoin white paper and where we are today with the industry growing and seeing this massive growth in technology narratives, both in terms of privacy preservation but also transaction system and scale. The two things which is not surprising, I've written about this too, Derek, has been on scale and on usability. Like, are we past the key management and the clunkiness of remembering the passphrases and inability to do that, allowing us to lose assets? Is that still viable? And that's been recognized as the biggest impediment for global adoption of technology and the crypto assets and the Web3 narratives. So I think there were a lot of projects which to me is a great sign, because it's a matter of 3 to 4 to 5 years before they solve some of these problems of usability. So account abstraction, which is a feature in Ethereum, which was introduced 6 months back, was of heavy focus. And there is ETH Denver, which is in the end of March in Denver, of course, which is the biggest Ethereum sort of developers conference, and now has become developers, investors, and VC conference altogether. I will be going to that event as well. I'm curious to see what are the conversations in Ethereum, because Ethereum, being the largest ecosystem and a structural asset alongside Bitcoin, I think has a lot to add to the growth of that ecosystem, both in terms of technology but also in terms of usability, because it commands and boasts the largest ecosystem of all blockchains, at the moment. While we see Solana and the various altcoins grow, alongside Ethereum, by far is the largest in that context.
So, as a by the by market observer, and I'll lead to technology in a moment. Of course, we saw Bitcoin rise to $49,500 and drop down to about 41 and a bit thousand as of this morning. And so it was just classic, buy on the rumor and sell on the news. And so, it came out, it was delivered, and it dropped back. Everyone expected that to happen. And what was interesting is, I think a good number of those who did well out of that took their money straight out of that and started putting it into Ethereum, that went from about 21 to 2500 at the time, in anticipation that Ethereum may well be the next ETF launched. We will see. But a lot of discussion around Ethereum has also been how vulnerable it is in regards to market domination, and what plays out with Solana and alternatives in this layer one battle. And at the same time, you're also hearing a lot of discussion around the tokenization of real world assets. And it seems to me that most people nod their head and go, the tokenization of real world assets are likely to be transacted on Ethereum, and because of the value associated with the process. any discussion, is tokenization of real-world assets a major discussion
Yeah.
at Davos?
Yeah, it was. And I think the Filecoin event that was hosted with Filecoin and CNBC was all about real world assets for traditional finance. And and it's, I think, unclear because there was whole debate on public versus private chains, which is
Yes.
a vehement disagreement between that private chain should exist because the whole point of blockchain is to have public infrastructures and what it
Yes.
needs to ensure the public infrastructure is secure and resilient enough for financial services to be offered on that. And examples from Franklin Templeton, which is an investment manager in the US, and Stellar Foundation, which has worked with Franklin Templeton, Stellar being one of the public chains, were trying to certify some examples to talk about the fact that public chains are the way to go. And while I agree with that sentiment and statement that I think public chain should be the future, just like internet is, has been sort of the dominant information exchange, vehicle and exchange, that we still have, I think, ways to go before the powers to be, which are the global regulators and the bodies that ensure the security and resiliency of the infrastructure. Because I think cybersecurity, as was cited as one of the biggest threat, and we need to solve that threat before we decide to move our entire financial system to a public chain.
Yes, yes.
So that was a, I think that was a very meaningful and relevant conversation. So it was not just crypto bros talking about the fact that let's move the whole thing to blockchain and blockchain will rule the world. It was more towards before we design a system, we need to make sure the system is scalable, it is secure, and it's dealing with the, as you know, cybersecurity is cited as one of the biggest national security threats around the world. But also, I think if it threatens the financial system, then it leads to a chaos that I don't think is desired by both the crypto side of the innovators and builders, but also the traditional finance from that perspective. And it's also funny, Derek, because this Davos for me again is exhausting because by the time you finish this and you come back and process this, you realize how exhausted you are. But Mark, as you know, Portal Asset Management CIO, we got to spend a full day with him in Davos, and I'm going to spend 2 days with him in Zurich meeting some of the investors. Petros, our quant advisor, as you know, we very rich conversation. Of course, me and Petros shared a room in Davos, and as brilliant as Petros is, he got to experience this. It was his first trip, but he was amazed. And as one of the intellectual beings and as a data scientist, he was trying to process all these things in terms of what does it mean to the industry and of course me. So we got to spend some quality time as the Portal team visiting. And again, we got to meet some potential investors and family offices and gauge their sort of priorities for 2024 and beyond,
Yes.
which I think also was enriching because I have not done that in the past for my obvious affiliation and due to the fact that I was working on various other things. This time I got to spend some time with the investors and investment, how they think, and not just purely on tech and purely on building the crypto economic systems as my past focus was. So again, as a Portal team, it was really good to hang out, and I still have 1 day to go. But we really wish, Derek, that you were here because that would complete the team. So
Just stop it,
ding on
Nick.
you.
Stop it. Stop it. So a lot of the family office, of course, that would have been there would have been quite avant-garde. I mean, these are the offices that really are looking over the horizon towards what the future looks like. To be at a place like Davos, they are looking at big pictures. What do you think their views were with regards to investment into the world of blockchain and cryptocurrency? And how far are they looking along? Are they looking past layer zero and layer one, layer two protocols towards layer three and four applications? Or are they simply saying, we don't know, we just want to deploy to the industry? Or are they sitting back on their hands and waiting for the industry to really see a very distant view of FTX in the and the the contagion of incompetence, as we call it, in the rear vision mirror? Where do you think they're up to with deploying to the
Yeah.
space?
So one thing which I think even the BlackRocks and the entire investment community and asset management community has cited, that one thing Bitcoin ETF has done is it is really fueled the education, the need for family offices, investment community to learn about these things at a much faster pace. And I think that's a great thing, which I think there's a lot of emphasis on the fact that people were genuinely interested in understanding the, it was not just a speculative asset anymore. The view around this is that this is, here to stay. It is not just a fad, which I think is a great thing. It's distilled to say we need to focus on this, as opposed to just making an experimental investment to see where this goes. That thinking is gone. And the beauty of, and I presented last year, I was here in Casper Lab event, and Casper Lab, as you know, is a entity that were trying to address by public infrastructure, and had they had their own tokens. They'd like to attract the likes of large enterprises onto the blockchain. In their event, I talked about contagion of incompetence, which is 3AC, FTX, Celsius, the entire. And the great thing was, which I think was, I was so happy, no one cared to discuss that at all. There was barely any conversation on reflecting upon the past, the FTX. No one really, people have moved on, which I think is a great thing. We have moved on from that. So there was, but to your point, Derek, I think one, if not anything else, ETFs has indicated that this industry is here for to stay, which has led to new metrics and understanding, which means now you have more intellectuals coming into the industry. And what used to be the old metric of number of wallets, number of engagement, has gone to a bit more serious conversation to say, what is the real utility of this? What does this mean? For example, if you look at what Celestia or one of these newer projects, are they really viable? Is the valuation of these tokens in line with the services they provide? So it's not just the frenzy of new token coming in and people just rushing to make investment or buy the tokens, which feeds the price at some crazy levels at some point. I think from at least the family offices and investors and investment community, is the focus on valuation has really heightened. And that to me is a really important part, because as we have discussed, the various apparatuses involved in pricing and value and figuring out the variance in price of value, which has been the entire focus of the financial services industries, to figure out the arbitrage between the real price and real value. I think that gap will shrink. And once you shrink the gap in price and value, you begin to understand the stabilization of the industry itself. And I think that was the focus of investment community, to say, when we get in, when we get out, do we have clear indications as, you know, into these asset classes? I think it was very refreshing conversation to begin. And I would expect that by next Davos, we'll find new models, new metrics from a data science perspective, but also in terms of the metrics that have never existed before, and how we measure the variance between the price and value of these crypto assets as they emerge.
Yes, very much so.
Which
The
to me,
analysis
Derek,
economics
is.
and the size of the community that manages these tokens is not easily extrapolated out of, equity analysis. It's not the same thing in many ways. And how that's going to be brought across is going to be most interesting to see it happen. Then finally, from your experience there, what do you see that industry, those communities that you were talking with? How do you see them projecting the next 18 months in regards to regulations, in regards to, adoption, in regards to investment? Was there any general view over an 18-month period what they thought that this sector was going to do?
So one thing is, I think ETF approval indicated that the regulatory forces have recognized that this is there. The another challenge is that post a realization that come May, the entire US Congress will be busy with the next year's election, which means nothing happens till Jan Feb of 2025, which was a disappointment for many of them to say, hey, we know US is going to go in this election. That takes away the focus will be on the next president as opposed to on more important things that they need to solve as the House of People, which is the Congress, you know, in the US. But there's also realization that you simply cannot ignore US only because of it is the largest market. It is has the largest amount of capital, and at the same time, the strengthening of dollar on the global scale from FX perspective, which is the currency markets, the geopolitical instability, as we have seen yesterday with few wars, and now the third one sparked off in Pakistan and Iran. There was a realization that strong United States is good for the world and the industry, and the disappointment was that US not doing enough for both, you know, technology and for both, even though the largest mindset, the investments, the largest companies who were there at the Davos event were all American companies. And you know, so I think it was a realization to say, hey, do we have to wait till 2025 for this to happen? And will the new president decide the fate of crypto? And what do we do in that interim? No conclusive outcomes, but these were the sort of discussion points. And I'll tell you, while I was here, it's an effort, Derek, because some of these events, really good conversations start at 7:45 in the morning, and if you're out till midnight and it's cold, and I got to hear Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, talking about the future of AI and where Microsoft is heading firsthand. My Mark Carney, who was the ex-governor of Bank of England, spoke on CBDC and stablecoins and central banks and policies, central banking sort of ecosystem. We, of course, as you posted, Petros got to take a picture with Ray Dalio, again,
Yes.
the iconic sort of, the fund manager for Bridgewater. So we saw a lot of these amazing personalities. I got to hang out with Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, very amicable
Mooch.
personality, and his here got to share his perspectives. Got to meet Yatsu, such a humble gentleman who, of course, is the chairman of Animoca Brown's brands, his perspective on Web3. And it's such an honor to meet these amazing people, and inspired by the humility that while they could have a celebrity status, they still choose to hang with us and share their perspective and learn from what we are thinking, both as innovators and entrepreneurs, in terms of where we want the industry to be heading. So it is rich. It was rich. Expensive and rich at the same time, I would say, Derek.
It's expensive for the rich and because of the cost of accessing there. I think it's fascinating as a side story, the fact that Davos has often been determined to be the place to hold such an extraordinary event because it sits in the mountains and it's minus 19 degrees Celsius. So you're not going to get a large number of people establishing tent cities around them and protesting because they just can't survive. That's quite clever. But so stepping back for a moment then, there was a you did get to meet Ray Dalio and you got to meet Bridgewater's lead, and you should say that a lot of these crypto leaders as such are humble and approachable. And I've discovered that in the conferences I've attended to, no one is unapproachable. Everyone is prepared to approach. And I wonder whether that's because crypto is based upon a blockchain, which is based upon community. The whole philosophy is community. And I think it's a very healthy thing for us. Lots more to talk about. We'll get together next week and do that again and expand on this. But it seems to me that Davos has shown to be, again, a forward-looking conference, Congress, and it's also shown to be positively looking forward for both crypto and AI. And that crypto now shares the stage with AI at Davos, which is fine. And it's extraordinary. I think we have to remind everyone how small this crypto industry is, how small its capitalization is, how small the number of people that actually work in it is, to have such a prominent position at a World Economic Forum like Davos. It is quite extraordinary. Any last words, Nitin?
No, I know we're a little behind in publishing this podcast only because sharing room, we had a house, we had a chalet, it was beautiful. We never got to enjoy it because we had to leave in the morning and come back late in the night in the mountains in a place called Grouse, which was an amazing, beautiful place. But we were seven of us in a house. It's very hard to find a quiet spot and do this. And so now that I'm back in Zurich, it is so that's hence the delay. But it was necessary for me to be able to share the experiences of having this last Tuesday to finish the Davos week and be able to share them what we've done, and hence the delay in this part. But I think we'll resume our normal recording, Derek, on next Tuesday, which is going to be so you'll find for the audiences and people who follow us. I certainly want to give a heartfelt thank you to our audiences because I did meet a lot of people who used to recognize me as an IBM guy, and now they recognize me as a Beyond Bitcoin guy, which I think was such a refreshing to see this our efforts, Derek, which beyond after 100 podcasts, we have that following. So I'm really thankful for our audiences and people who follow us, and I continue to ensure that we are creating content that's meaningful for their consumption. So looking forward to next Tuesday, which I think we should dive right back into where the industry is heading and the new projects that emerge.
Terrific, indeed. So we do our recordings on Tuesday. They normally go live on Thursday after that. And Nitin, you've probably met, we have met, some extraordinary people there. I'm looking forward to having some of them on as guests over the next 6 months so that we can share some of those connections that you've been making with the audience. But for now, great to see you. Great great to have you, you know, having been there, enormously jealous that I wasn't. Thanks for sharing it with the audience, Nitin. See you next week.
Take care, Derek. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed our weekly conversation. If you have any questions, comments, or suggested topics, please contact Nitin Gaur or myself on the emails displayed here or via our LinkedIn profiles. Feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. Stay well, inquisitive, and engaged. See you next week.